Thank you, Honorable Members of the Committee. I believe a document has been circulated to you. But if I could orientate you to the document, you will see on the left is a reference to a clause, that's the clause in the bill. In the middle column deals with the comments or inputs that we received. And then the last column is the proposed response by the department to the comment on that particular. The document runs from clause 1 of the bill right through to the end of the bill, clause 51. I should point out that you will probably not find comments or inputs on certain of the clauses, and it is simply because there weren't any received in the written or oral submissions made. What we will also do during the course of this session is to conscientize you, or rather draw your attention to those comments and inputs which would have a possible impact on amendments to the bill itself, and matters which, as you recall, would have been.
Sorry, I need to apologize. We were still waiting for something to. We were supposed to have tea and whatever. Unfortunately, but anyway, it's still coming. Thank you.
As we go through the document, we will point out to you those aspects of the comments which have been raised either in submissions, written or oral, which were contentious, so that we can try and provide some clarity on some of the issues raised. Now, if I could comment with clause 1, the major issue relating to clause 1, which is the definition of clause 1, is whether built environment profession definition should be changed, revised, or extended. The first comment was that the definition of those environment is vague. The department's response in regard thereto is it has in fact been broadened so as to make sure that it is inclusive of all professions and especially the engineering disciplines and their there was a suggestion that a grievance procedure for persons to appeal to the council should be included in the bill, and the department's response in regard thereto is that given that the professional boards are given authority in respect of matters set out in section 16. And as you would have noted, section 16.3a specifically provides that in respect of those matters which falls within the ambit of the professional board, no ratification is required by a council. Providing for a grievance procedure may very well negate the provisions of section 16, and most importantly will certainly impact on the peer review requirements in regard to the competencies of the board. The remainder of the first page dealing with candidates or professionals are really not significant matters. If I can move on to the next significant suggestion that was made, you will find on the second page of the document, on the third row, there was a suggestion that professional categories and professional disciplines should be defined. Now, the response from the department is that the definition currently of profession would ordinarily mean as prevailing in the architectural or engineering profession, and then the sub-disciplines are typically, as was explained to the committee, by the various institutes, your normal various disciplines within engineering, for example, civil, electrical, and so forth, whatever professional categories deals with the three levels, which is your engineer professional level, technologist level, as well as your technician level. There was a complaint that the definition of professional conduct is vague. It does not refer to a code of conduct. The response from the department is, the failure to comply with code of conduct will be the basis, ordinarily, of determining what is unprofessional conduct. But the definition is broad enough to make sure that if the code of conduct isn't covering a particular scenario, bearing in mind that the list is unlikely to be exhaustive, you know, in a code of conduct, then the professional boards are able to inquire into that unprofessional conduct. You've also heard about the suggestion of the town planners and environment management consultants, and the response that they should be included in those professions to be regulated by the bill. And the department's response is that town planners and environment management consultants do work with BEs and will therefore fall within the professions. They will be regulated once in the bill, once the minister establishes professional boards to regulate them. You remember that each of the professions will get its own professional board. So once a decision has been taken that town planners should fall within the realm of those environments, the definition is broad enough to include them, then all that remains is just the establishment of a professional board for them to come into the end of the act. Then the remainder of the clauses, the next contentious clause that was dealt with was clause 4. Now, this is a clause that obviously gives the council its very essence in the sense of what will it be doing, what will be its function. Quite a number of comments were made in regards to the function of the council. You will see on the third page of the document, the first concern was that the bill removes authority of the university as it grants both authority on education and training. This is a comment you will remember that went through most of the submissions by CASA and by the South African Qualifications Authority, and most other persons also made mention of this particular concern. The response is, the bill does not remove the authority of the university to determine the educational programs. It provides for the professional board to assess educational programs of the university for accreditation for the registration. To put differently, a university can offer whatever degree it wants to offer. But if that degree is intended to qualify somebody to register as a professional, then the professional board must accredit that particular program. So it is not invading, it is actually ensuring that whatever a university produces as a qualification for registration as a professional, it actually meets the requirements of what that regulates a particular profession. Now, there was a comment that the functions of council are extensive and that the council should not take over functions of the chief professional council as currently constituted, especially because it is envisaged that the SACDE would meet at least twice a year. The response is that the bill places a minimum number of meetings, which is 2 times a year, but quite obviously, should there be a need for more meetings in a year, there's nothing in the bill that would prevent the SACDE from as often as its business requires. There was a suggestion that there's a potential conflict relating to roles and responsibilities of the council and the board, and that they should be clearly defined for those conflicts. And then section 16.3 to the minister. Remember, section 16.3 basically gives the professional board certain autonomy in respect of certain matters, but it also says if there's a dispute as regards where does the power reside. Does the power reside with the professional board, or does the power reside with the council? Then a dispute resolution mechanism has been built in section 16.3b, which provides the council's decision on whether a matter falls within its jurisdiction or the jurisdiction of the professional board will be binding on the professional board. As you can imagine, that provision is necessary so as to avoid a situation where there's a tug of war between the professional board and the council, and there is no way of resolving other than equality costs. There was a suggestion that insofar as council has a function to advise the minister, it shouldn't await the minister to request such advice, but it should be able to make such advice and accommodation to the minister, as it may deem a trash. The department's response is to agree to the proposed change, clause 41K. Then there was a function which relates to council, clause 41N, which relates to council ensuring consistent application of policy by professional boards. The suggestion is we should add taking due cognizance of the difference between expressions, and it seems like a reasonable request. That's the response to the department here. So it provides for the uniqueness of any particular professional board. There was a suggestion that voluntary associations should be automatically recognized. We will, in dealing with section 51, be responding as a department to this by suggesting that in order to make sure that there is immediate continuity when the legislation takes effect, one, and two, to make sure that the process of finalizing the regulations is not unduly delayed, there should be some transitional recognition of existing voluntary associations. So that to the extent that they require to be consulted by the council or the minister in formulating regulations, that process is not delayed by the very process of recognition of voluntary associations. There was a complaint about the revenue of professional boards being pooled and redistributed at the discretion of council. I think this issue was deliberated quite at length during the hearing. The idea is to bring about an economy of scale, and the department's response to that complaint is that all the professions are regulated by a single act under a single body. So the income generated through registration will be funds of the council and not that of the individual professional board, and accordingly the council will allocate those resources according to the needs of the various professional boards. The next major complaint relates to the authority of council to control and exercise the authority in respect of training and education. And I think the department's response on this lies at three levels. The first one is that the accreditation of educational programs is in fact a requirement in order for the profession to retain their international status. And secondly, the council exercises control and authority in respect of education and training only insofar as such qualifications, insofar as qualifications entitling people to registration are concerned. And the professional board, which have the necessary expertise, will be required to establish mechanisms to gain recognition of their qualifications as professional officers in our country. There was also a complaint regarding the authority of council to ensure consistent application of policy, competence testing by professionals. The department's response in regard thereto is there is a need to harmonize, obviously, that's why the overarching body is set up. Now, the process of registration will have of necessity to include the educational qualifications which qualify people, the practical training which entitles people to, which they must undergo to be able to register, and the peer review competency testing by professionals. So, whilst education and training institutions are involved in the process of training, they are qualified, they are required educational qualifications, the competency testing by professionals will be done at professional board level. Peer review assessment is also then a necessary process in order to sustain international recognition. On the issue of the conflict between the role of the professional board and the council in education and training, and all the other statutory bodies, council for higher education, the quality council as envisaged by the new national qualification bill, alternatively the current dispensation under the Statutory Act I think the point to be made there in the response of the department is simply this. In respect of all matters where the council or the professional board make have authority in respect of either accreditation of institutions, minister promulgating qualifications, and so forth, all those provisions are in fact subject to all of the current educational legislation. To put differently, the bill recognizes that all those structures that are there in the educational framework and which have authority to do, take for instance the quality councils as envisaged in the new NQF bill. The role it fulfills relating to ensuring quality assurance and accrediting programs and so forth are roles which are recognized in the current formulation of the bill, which makes that which the new council and its professional board will be doing subject there. As well as an example, if you read section 418, the council must, then it says, subject to the South African Qualifications Authority Act, Higher Education Act, Skills Development Act, Further Education and Training Colleges Act, Control and Exercise Authority Act, and all that. And the NQF bill envisages that the tutoring bodies such as these would be delegated the function that it has, that it envisages the quality council having in ensuring quality in education. Now that would deal in essence with all of the submissions made in respect of education, except for one. There has been a suggestion that the reference to South African Qualifications Authorities in the bill should be changed in view of the fact that there is a new bill, NQF bill, which is going to change that. The department's response to that is simply that, in terms of the Interpretation Act, any subsequent legislation which changes existing legislation would be read into any other legislation in which the new legislation is effective. To put differently, if and when the South African Qualifications Authority Act is replaced by National Qualifications Framework Act, when that eventually takes that particular act will be read into everywhere in the current bill where the South African Qualifications Authority Act is effective. Then there was a suggestion that in regard to clause 41K and 41L, that in the light of the democratic principles of freedom of speech and encouragement of public participation, the council should not require the minister's request to provide advice. We've already advised you that the department's response to that is that it is agreeable to the proposed change, that council should also, when it is fit, provide advice to the minister. The next submission deals again with matters relating to education and training, and this was already addressed. The complaint in regard to clause 42D, that powers of delegation are extremely wide and that potentially one person could be given authority in respect of all matters affecting the education and training of persons. The department's response to that is that this clause is wide because it is a general clause on delegation. The extent of delegation as well as the person to whom a function power is delegated will depend obviously on the nature of the specific function, and it is noted for consideration when the powers are to be delegated. In regard to section clause 5, there was a suggestion that there must be separate board for horticulture, and the response to this is, for as long as the profession naturally fits within the definition of those environment professions, the minister would consider establishing any other board and is empowered in terms of decision to do so after consultation with the council. There was a request that there should be clarity provided for the criteria for recognition of VA, and the response of the department is this, is technical details should not be dealt with in the bill, as the criteria will be determined by council of the competition with special bowl. Now, a lot has been made of cloth 6, obviously, because it deals with the composition of the SACDE. Now, the complaints in regards thereto can mostly be set out as follows. The first one is that there is insufficient professional representation on SACDE. The second one is professions such as engineering have 9 disciplines and 4 categories per discipline, and therefore there should be proportional representation of professions on the HSCDE depending on the number of disciplines within a profession. And then you will recall there were complaints as well about the fact that community representatives are to be appointed without reference to them being a registered person. And if I could deal with this in turn, in regard to insufficient professional representation on the SACDE, the department's response is that at least 6 persons come from the profession. And secondly, obviously, and this may very well be something that the chairperson was complaining about, the complaint suggests that the minister, by way of an example, when it comes to people to be designated from educational institutions, to go and appoint a professor in arts and culture to come and sit in a council that deals with built environment. Quite obviously, the relevant people to be appointed from the infrastructure department, from public works, from the educational institutions, would have to be persons who are involved in the built environment profession, and that would in effect give 10 out of the 18 admitted appointees would typically be from the profession. Now, in regard to the proportional representation on the SACDE, the department's response is council fulfills an overarching role relating to all professions. There isn't a need for disciplines within professions to be represented at that level, because everything else to do with that specific profession is dealt with at professional board level. So there is no need really for because engineering has so many disciplines and property values has only one perhaps discipline, so therefore there should be for every one property value representative there should be 9 engineering. The department's response in regard to this is really not necessary when one has regard to the role that would be played by the Now, in regards to community representatives and whether bodies such as NEDLAC shouldn't perhaps nominate them, and whether these people shouldn't have expertise necessary for the proper carrying out of functions, the department agrees that as currently formulated, only 3 of the 6 are required to have expertise necessary for the proper carrying out of the function. The department agrees that all 6 should have the necessary expertise in the proper carrying out of the function. The suggestion that such persons may be registered persons, the department is not agreeable to that, because these community representatives are intended to bring about the public contribution to the affairs of the profession, and there would be adequate professional representation in your articulation. There is one particular issue on the constitution of council, which the National Society of Black Engineers has alluded to and have made a suggestion in regard to an amendment. It is what appears to us to be a chicken and egg scenario. If professional boards are required to designate the 6 professionals to sit on the SACDE, the NSDE submission is twofold. The one is, professional boards can only be established after council has been constituted. So you can't constitute council because you don't have professional boards. That's the chicken and egg scenario. But secondly, and most validly, they have suggested that the designation of the professionals who sit decision of the council by the professional board brings about the unnecessary problem of those designated members sitting on the SACDE on the basis of a mandate supposedly received from the professional board. So whatever they should represent of the profession, they shouldn't necessarily be designated by the professional board. So the suggestion is the department's response to that is cognizance is taken and it seems like a valid criticism, and the suggestion is that 61A should be reworded so as to remove the necessity for designation of the professional by professional board. Then there were some housekeeping issues on clause 7. My should be May, which is a feature. There was a suggestion that the minister must appoint a new council immediately after dissolution of the previous council. The department's response to that is, in the ordinary course, obviously, for the proper functioning of the regulation of the profession, this will have to be done immediately, but it doesn't have to necessarily be specified. If I could take you back to clause, this is something that I missed there. Given the proposed change on 61A on composition, and the fact that professional boards no longer designate, clause 6.4 is going to fall away. Clause 6.4 is the one that deals with the designation by professional board, well, the failure by professional board to designate, and what the minister might do in those cases. So that clause will fall away and be revised in view of the suggested change. This clause 6.1A and 6.4 is the first of the major changes that the department suggests should be acceded to. There was a complaint regarding the powers of the minister to appoint a chair and a vice chair and to approve the appointment of the register. The department's response to that is that this criticism should be rejected. In fact, most of our statutory bodies are constituted on that basis. The appointment of a chair and a vice chair is by the minister, and for obvious reasons, that person must have the ability to impact the executive authority to which the body is accountable to. And obviously, the appointment of a registrar who controls the CEO's role is also a very critical appointment in the structure. So, the suggestion that the council should be given the power to propose a vote of no confidence from the chairperson or the vice chairperson. The department is currently considering the suggestion, but the current thinking is if the minister has the power to appoint chairperson and vice chairperson, and not the council, then you can't give the council the power to remove a chairperson or a vice chairperson, because then you're usurping, in effect, the power given to the minister. Then clause 12, which deals with the registrar, there was a complaint of the registrar, does not have too much power, and responsibility should be delegated to committee council. This has been rejected by the department on a simple basis, and the registrar fulfills a number of statutory functions in the legislation. And then if you have regard to them, most of those are really more administrative in nature than actually the exercise of the discretion. The discretion is exercised at council level. Section 15, that's the section that deals with accreditation and training of institutions. There was a complaint that the bill removes the authority of the universities and grants both authority on education and human methods. We've already dealt with this issue. Universities are more than welcome to offer whatever program they wish to offer, as they may be entitled to within the framework of higher education. To the extent that they wish to offer programs which have the object of qualifying somebody to register a profession, then obviously the profession has a say in it, because they are the ones that will determine whether a person is eligible. There was a complaint that regarding the establishment of boards, that it is silent on the administrative head of the professional board, and that the bill should recognize the administrative head of the professional board. This suggestion has been rejected for the simple reason that if an administrative body is created within another administrative body, it will obviously be reiterating the current problem with the silos existing within a body. An organogram has been done to try and demonstrate how the professional board will function within the current system. In regard to clause 15.5b, there's a complaint that the limitation of committee reps to be registered for professionals seems unconstitutional. We're not too sure why it wasn't set out very well enough. The department's response is we will check on the constitutional limitation. But it's currently advised to come see how the limitation of community representation to persons not registered can possibly be unconstitutional. Then, in regard to section 16, which are the powers of the board, there was a complaint again regarding education and training methods. This has been rejected and is already explained why the professional board and council also have power relating to education training and subject the education legislation. There was a complaint in regard to the power of the professional board to grant people with the right accreditation and that institutions shouldn't provide training unless accredited. This is a similar complaint relating to the competencies of the professional board and how these align themselves to the competencies of all the other educational boards. Section 17 is a continuation of methods relating to education and training. The point we've made to the department in response is to the extent that the professional board fulfill certain functions within the education framework, they do so in certain circumstances arising from delegated functions, such as are contemplated in the NQF bill. Then we get to section 18, which is, as you will recall, at the heart of the new dispensation, which deals with compulsory registration. The suggestion is that the provision should be revised, section 18. The prohibition of persons practicing both environment professions unless registered, together with the general vagueness of what constitutes adult environment definition makes it difficult to know exactly who this bill applies to. And this appears to the department to be a misreading of the various provisions of the bill. The definition of the adult environment profession obviously refers to professions for which boards have been established. The provisions of the bill will therefore apply to all those environment professions for which professional boards have been established. Section 18.3 is deals with the registered and certified documents submitted in support of an application certified requirements and empowering the registrar to register. There was a complaint in regard to this provision that the registration of individuals must be judged by the professional board and advice of peers, and that this provision will jeopardize the recognition of SA education standards. The response of the department is again a misreading of the bill. The competencies of the professional board in section 16 are clearly, amongst others, to be responsible for education of professionals, and 18.3 envisages the registrar fulfilling the administrative function of making sure that the person who has complied with all the required requirements is then registered. comments dealing with sections 19, 20, and 23, which is basically the keeping of the register by the registrar, appear to us to also be a misreading of the legislation. In other words, the failure to appreciate what role does the professional board play and what role does the civilian register play. Section 25 is another pillar provision. It deals with the minister's power to prescribe qualifications. Now, the complaint is that if the minister is responsible for prescribing qualifications, which makes you need for registration, then we're going to lose international accreditation and recognition. And there's a complaint that the person may qualify for registration on the strength of obtaining prescribed qualifications and pass additional examination, and this is a departure from the peer review process, which is prescribed by international agreement. The department's response in respect of this one is that the international standards, as currently prevail, will be maintained, in that whatever qualifications the minister would prescribe would obviously be taken into account the international norms and standards. And secondly, the department is currently considering whether to not also, for the sake of completeness, include a consultation process between the Minister of Public Works and the Minister of Education prior to promulgation of regulations related to . There was a complaint regarding section 26, which deals with qualifications which are not prescribed. Put differently, this section will deal with qualifications held by people who are foreigners in South Africa and who obtain those qualifications outside of South African universities, outside of the country, and therefore which wouldn't form part of what the minister will prescribe. Now, it seems to us that, again, there has been a misreading of the particular clause. The complaint goes, this section may have negative consequences on university accepted independent professions. There's a complaint that there's an impression created by the provision that a person may qualify on the strength of obtaining prescribed qualifications, and that there's a departure from the peer review process. The department's response in respect of this is that the minister will provide the broad framework within which foreign qualified qualifications will be recognized by the council and the professional board. The council will prescribe everything else to deal with the nature of examination and evaluation that needs to be conducted to determine is this foreign qualification equivalent to a South African degree X or Y or Z. And the complaints that have been raised under this section on this plate. Section 28 was the next section which complaints were raised on. This relates, amongst others, to the misalignment between the heading and the section itself. The department proposes to that this heading be renamed, the heading of the section, to read registration of persons who are permanently resident within the Republic of Education and Training Services. The purpose of the section is to make sure that any person who is a foreigner and who academic institutions would invite to come and lecture with us, who may, in the process of lecturing, be performing certain professional acts for purposes of demonstrating to the students how to do X and Y and Z, should be registered in that particular category so as to avoid a complaint that they are performing professional X, whereas they are not registered. So that is the purpose of the section 8 we intended. was a complaint regarding section 29, and the complaint lies at two levels. The first is that what happens when a professional board withdraws the accreditation of an educational institution and poor students are not aware of it and they get graduated at that particular university? Is that not unfair of them to have a provision reading does it not have an unfair effect to say for a qualification which has been granted by an institution to which whose accreditation has been withdrawn does not entitle the holder to registration under the Act? It's not unfair to them. And secondly, the other complaint was it is not too harsh to empower a professional board to be able to withdraw accreditation in the manner that section 29 of section 2. Now, the response to the first issue relating to students who may be unaware of the institution no longer has accreditation is, the department's response to that is, it is a balancing act between public interest. Public interest being an institution is no longer in a position to maintain the standards required to produce graduates who would be entitled to the. And because of that, the public is now being threatened in that those graduates may very well be graduates of a substandard level. That's the one interest. Balance that interest against a student who may be doing third year at the time at which the accreditation is withdrawn and is unaware of it and continues to compete in that particular form. Public interest seems to favor the protection of the public more than the protection of this possible uninformed students. And in the ordinary course of events, what most professional councils do, like the health professional council, is they publish the fact of the withdrawal of accreditation quite widely. And to the extent that they are aware of any particular student that may have registered in that institution, they try and reach out to them to make sure they are aware of the situation. The second complaint relates to the fact that the power to withdraw the accreditation in this circumstance is unfair. The department's response is, the power to withdraw is the accreditation can only be exercised if the institution fails or refuses to finish particulars requested by the professional board. So in other words, it's an interactive process. It's not just a wake up and say they don't comply and therefore the professional board is withdrawing Section 31, there was a suggestion that an appeal process should be introduced for somebody whose application for registration has been declined. The department's response to that is that the peer review is done at professional board level. And Section 16.3a is intended to make sure that the decision they take is not capable of ratification. Given that the registration process would be objective, transparent, and so forth, it is hoped that aggrieved persons would be able to take up any decision made by a professional board to the relevant jurisdiction for review purposes. But to allow an appeal on a peer review issue, counsel would negate the peer review requirement of the international. Clause 44, a lot was made about Clause 44, which gives the Minister the power to exempt certain juristic patterns from the provisions of the Act. I think it was also a serious misread of it. The clause is intended to provide for a simple scenario where, by way of an example, an engineering firm practices as a company. Incorporated company. Now, the engineering firm is the one that performs the professional act. Now, unless if the minister exempts the company from holding qualifications, it would theoretically be in contravention of the act, insofar as it may be used for purposes of contracting with clients for purposes of rendering services which are considered to be specialized. So it is intended not to provide for a blanket exemption in respect of certain companies, but it is intended to make sure that to the extent that the members of the company would hold the qualification, but the company itself obviously can't hold the qualification, it would still be allowed to be a professional firm within a firm. Was another major complaint. It's related to what are searches and seizures. It should be borne in mind that when a professional board has challenges with an educational institution and whether it is still maintaining the standards which are prescribed for an institution to continue offering training, there may be physical inspection required. For instance, most of the problems is typically have workshops, and workshops have equipment, and to make sure that students are being exposed to practical training at workshop level, may be necessary to physically go and inspect the facilities of the university. If there is no cooperation, there is a need for the professional board to be able to enter premises for purposes of conducting accreditation. 47 is intended to provide them with such power. An issue which we still need to consider is whether public institutions have a right to privacy. Because remember, this is a public institution in the nature of the university, and another public institution in the nature of the statutory council. Now, can a university say to a council, I have a right to privacy as I, an individual, would if somebody wants to search and see my property? That's an issue we will consider and see whether the section doesn't need revision with a view to building in the usual protection mechanisms such as a search warrant authorized by court. Section 48 dealing with the regulations in broad terms. 48.1A.1, the registration of candidates. Who are enrolled at institutions. The department responds that to complain that students shouldn't be required to register. They are not involved in projects for which registration is necessary, and it would add a cost to their study. The department responds to that is the requirement for registration will be removed. The complaint of the minister has the power to regulate without a public consultation process. Should council recommend it? And the response of the department to that is there will be circumstances where there is an immediate and urgent need to regulate. And section 48.5 was intended to empower the minister, if recommended by council, for purposes of taking immediate and urgent action to regulate without publishing. Comment as section 48 subsection 4. Now, in regards to transitional arrangements, there is a need, and in view of the comments relating to voluntary associations being continued to be recognized under the new dispensation without having to apply. The department is of the view that there should be transitional provisions inserted relating to recognition of the current voluntary associations which are currently registered. And there are two reasons for this. The first one is because they are part of the body of the defined body that the minister and the council needs to consult with, it would speed up the process of making regulations, on the one hand. And on the other hand, the suggestion is that the recognition should be until such time as the processes and details to section 5 have been put in place. Then they can reapply for recognition. Then there's just another method of housekeeping. There are two subsection 2 in section 5. And those are, in the main, the department responses to the comments. Thank you, Madam Chair. Those are in broad terms the responses to the submissions that have been made, comments and inputs. And as you may have noticed, there are certain changes that have been proposed which the department has considered.
Thank you so much, for the presentation. I think maybe we'll have to take all the presentations back to
we were requested as well to prepare a memorandum to the committee in respect of how does the department see the legislation unfolding. In other words, how do we move from the current dispensation to the new dispensation? We've prepared a memorandum, the purpose of which is to basically set out the main pillars of features of the legislation. As you are quite acutely aware, a lot is going to come by way of regulation, which is going to basically flesh out some of the provisions contained in the legislation. So we set out the main pillars or features of the legislation, and then we then set out how the department sees the legislation being practically implemented. Now the legislation has a fight for the nuts and bolts issue. It has basically 11 main features. The first one is obviously the Constitution of Council in terms of Section 6. Then comes the establishment of a professional board in terms of Section 15, and then the powers and functions of a professional board is another important feature of the legislation in terms of Section 15. Registration of professionals, as honourable members will remember, was a very hotly debated issue, Section 19. Qualification for registration is another important pillar, Section 25. Then the definition of the scope of the profession is another important pillar. Registration and use of additional qualifications is the next pillar, and then obviously rules and fees payable by registered persons. The rules would be the rules relating to the functioning of the business council, missing personal calls, and then on the transitional arrangement side, obviously the commencement date. Bill envisages the commencement date. The commencement date is intended to make sure the minister can start acting in terms of the act. And then in such as, for instance, to constitute the council, and then effective date being the day on which the old dispensation comes to an end and the new one starts. Now, the practical implementation of the legislation as the department sees it is an 11-step process. Because there's a lot of work to be done in regard to regulations relating to establishment of the board, compulsory registration and so forth. The department's view is that a lot of that work needs to be done prior to the current dispensation being brought to an end. Simple reasoning being, we envisage the process of formulation of regulations to be a reasonably lengthy process, so there shouldn't be too big or too lengthy, rather, a gap between when the new dispensation starts and when the regulations are in place. So it is envisaged that a task team would be established, and that task team would consist of representatives of built environment professions, public works, state departments, education, community representatives, and higher education representatives. Now that task team would simply mirror image the constitution of the council as envisaged in Section 6. Their primary function, which is now step 2, which develops all the necessary regulations that will underpin the legislation. So the casting will be required to consult extensively with all affected stakeholders. So they will start by way of an example with taking issue of registration. They will go to all the councils and say, by the way, how do you go about currently registration processes of individuals. The idea being to do an early study, which would obviously result in the good and the bad about the processes currently embarked upon relating to registration. It will go to the councils and say to them, which programs have you accredited and what are their content? So as to inform the Minister of Regulations on qualifications. It will go to the Council for Built Environment and say, you had a policy on identification of work, you had certain councils had given you the identification of work submissions, let's have a look at that. So the idea being that this consultation, or to go to the international bodies and say, what would your requirements be to make sure that we're in our standing with you, as far as peer review is concerned and so on. Now, the next step that they would also embark upon as a task team is would be to design the new SACV organizationally. So they would basically develop a corporate plan, strategic plan. They would consult HR experts so as to make sure that the capacities that are required to make the organization function properly is in place properly. They'll also be responsible for basically reporting to the Minister on the current state of the council as far as assets, liabilities, employees, contracts, and so forth are concerned, which will be transferred into the new entity. This process, which we envisage would take anything up to 6 months, would culminate in a report to the Minister, which would say to her, we've consulted widely, here are all the pillar regulations required to make the legislation work, and this is the organizational structure. The Minister would obviously then consider, approve, with or without amendments, and then, once she's done that, she's in a position to put the old to bed and to then give notice of the first meeting of council, which would then be the effective date of the legislation. The thinking is that when council sits, the Minister will put to them all the regulations she needs to consult with them. Say, here are my regulations, you go and speak to the professional boards about it. I need you to approve the regulations relating to the constitution of the professional board so that the remainder of the regulations can be finalized. The Minister will then consult on the draft regulations. She will then establish the professional board, and then she will consult again the council and the professional board and voluntary association on the regulations relating to the scope of the built environment profession. And after that consultation process, she will then publish the regulations for comment. Now, this phase from the time that the council has its first meeting until she is done consulting with the council and the professional board and regulation is envisaged to take about 3 months. Minister then publishes the regulations as she would have consulted with council and the board and the voluntary associations on for comment by the public, and the public participation process is then completed probably in about 2 or 3 months, and then the full set of regulations is then put in place, and we have a fully functional legislation. So, it is envisaged that this entire process will take, in all probability, 12 months, the first 6 months being undertaken by the task team, and the whole dispensation being applicable, and then the last 6 months being a process during which the Minister consults first and foremost with the Council, and the professional boards, and the last 3 months is the public participation process. That is how the department sees the process. Thank you. Oh, if I may, we've actually also, you see, on the chair, set out the process in a schematic form at the last page of the department document, which basically step by step deals with how each one of the processes is unfolded. From the time that the President ascends to the bill, setting up the task team consulting, making a recommendation, the Minister is then ready to request the President to put the legislation into operation, then Council gets established, then there's an effective date, consultation on the regulations, and establishment of the board, and then the regulations get eventually published with comments, and the Minister considers the comments, amends the regulations, fit, and then publishes it. And then there's a new decision. Thank you.
Maybe why you are absorbing what you have told us. You have more brave things than you get the last to the end for 5 minutes.
Thank you. I'm not fine. I need your call yesterday.
Because I didn't see the truth here. I brought half the bread. The other half is still sleeping.
Hey, that's our time, Glana.
Eh?
That's our time, Glana.
To Glana.
To Glana.
Ah, no, I didn't.
You don't even have, you even sacrifice the truth for the other food.
Yeah. I don't know.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. I think we need to continue for another meeting at half past one. We have attempted to put the structure together based on some information that we received. We're sourcing more information and further detail was flowed from, but in the general scheme of things,
this seems to be in the core structure. There'll be minor tinkling here and there, and this is not cast in stone, and any suggestions will be welcome.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I did not, Chairperson. Instead, members disturbed the meeting. I didn't open the mouth. Three of them.
Sorry, Chairperson.
The first slide speaks of the structure of the office of the CEO or the registrar. As one can see, there's the three main posts. One is the senior manager in the office of the CEO. This post deals with mainly strategic management matters. We'll see that in a bit of detail later. The other two senior key posts are that of the chief operating officer and the chief financial officer. In this slide, we speak to the office of the chief operating officer, and you can see that we have four general managers functioning under him. One is the general manager of education, training, and administration, general manager of board operations, general manager operations support, general manager legal services. General manager board operations basically speaks to the functioning of the six professional boards. And general manager operations support is basically your bureaucracy, the administration of the SECB. And your general manager education, training, and registration, the key posts are education and training, where your focus are on CPD. Second one is manager assessment. I think that's quite self-explanatory. And the last one is registration. With the registration of our professionals, which is the administrative function within the administration. I think fundamentally it is keeping of records that's quite important. And we envisage that possibly to have two posts, one. Board operations, your board coordinators, we envisage to be your key posts here. This will perform the function to those that are currently performed by the current registrars of the various councils. They would deal with the accepting board decisions, ensuring board meetings take place. They would ensure all correspondence within the profession is coordinated in the proper direction. The board secretaries are simply that. They would ensure correct communicating at board meetings and at subcommittee meetings. The operations support, knowledge management, client services, manager facilities management, and HR management. The recent thinking around manager facilities management, we think it may be a post that may be outsourced, the complete function there, that the cleaning staff and the maintenance staff possibly outsource that entire unit. Under client services, there's thinking that we may need to expand the call center itself, the call center operators, currently in which three. We are thinking that this call center should be a central point of contact for the public and the industry at large. So your call center operators people have to be highly skilled, quite knowledgeable of the entire operation of the SECB. So we have the operators would have to exchange calls from the public where they want to make complaints, and the procedure would have to be explained to them and relevant documentation then to the public. They'll also deal with students and what's in the registration process and what's required of them, and put a little documentation need to send them. So there would be quite an extensive knowledge base within that operation call center. The legal services broke up in two branches: manager tribunal services, the other is advisory services and contract administration. Tribunal services, and this is thinking around here, is that you would either outsource or in-house this function, and that would be determined by the volume of complaints made. Obviously, the higher the volume of complaints, you would probably want to in-house it. But if it's smaller volumes, then you'll probably outsource it just on a cost basis. The advisory services and contract administration is simply applied to the supply chain of the financial services. Three main areas here: the financial accounting, management accounting, and procurement officer. I think procurement officer is quite self-explanatory. So it's management accounting, basically budgeting for the organization and reporting on an ongoing basis. Financial accounting is where you deal with your income management and expenditure. The one thinking is that currently we may have too many debit clerks and credit clerks, that depends on the volume, you know. And also the volume indicating that we may require two cashiers. That will depend on the volume of professionals that will be paying by cash. If we, over a period of time, we find out that large volumes of the professionals actually prefer electronic forms of payment, and these posts may need to be done away with. And finally, is your office of your CEO. As you could see, you have a planning specialist planning for the organization itself. We have a manager monitoring and evaluation, manager compliance audit, and manager communication and stakeholder relations. We are currently thinking of reworking manager monitoring and evaluation into manager research, and under that have two M&E specialists and have a single researcher. The researcher will do a qualitative kind of research that will look at international best practices, look at what's happening globally in terms of particular industries. We'll also be able to do some sort of other qualitative research. I don't know what's being done by the M&E. Stakeholder management, while the small scale of volume, but we envisage a single person to deal with the stakeholders and one to specifically focus on communication. Sure, thank you. I think that's
any questions for clarity or
Madam Chair, yes, it seems to me we as a committee have already been sidelined because we now have the structures and we have everything going. So the bill doesn't really belong to this committee. It belongs to the department right from the start. They made decisions. From what I've just seen, I would like to know, what are these structures going to cost? In other words, the salaries, the annual salaries, the pensions payable, etc., to get these people employed. Who is going to pay for it, and what does it look like compared to the existing structures that the prison will have?
Thank you. Okay.
All right, thank you, Chairperson. I think that the person will start that by appreciating the report which I hear in front of us. At least now we can see that this animal is shaping up. It's something which you can now start investing in. Whatever. But the question which I'm going to ask here is pertaining the first the second presentation in particular. That one, the issue of transitional arrangement. You know, last week we were disturbed when the Chairperson reported to us that Mr. Mabimbela was threatened. Mr. Matosera was threatened. And then it showed that these people have strong sentiments for retaining the status quo. We don't know who they are, but basically, it was done by Sagar, which has happened there. The question the person will ask then, if the people are so sentimental about this, what will happen during the transitional arrangement? Are they not going to start looting the resources which are there? Because I can see here that there must be transfer of assets, liabilities, whatever it might be. But if they are so sentimental about that, what arrangement are they putting in place to ensure that there is going to be no looting, there is going to be no incurring of unnecessary liabilities, so that the incoming council is bound by certain things which they cannot get out? How are they going to ensure that the contracts they might come out with, we are not going to have the leases of 99 years, we should be paid to a particular company, so that they retain that? What transitional arrangements are going to be, so that we can avoid that? Because if people can threaten to kill, then that they can go all the way to do certain things which are wrong. But by and large, and then the second question will be the issue of not only the structure. I'm concurring with my colleague there, Mr. Blanchett. Really, we must have some sort of a knowledge. How much is it going to cost us to implement this bill? So that we can ensure that the fiscal is going to take it up, or is it going to be the council or the professional boards which are there? We must get at least the estimate where, what figure are we dealing with? Because I had a nasty experience. One bill which I was part of working on, it was estimated to be 500 billion, the implementation. But the very first presentation which we wanted, the cost now, after it has been costed, it came up to the check of 7 billion, which was more than the budget of the department itself. No, so even here, we have to get to those things. What is happening? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I would like to thank the department for the work they have put together. Last week, for 3 days, members of the committee listened to the submissions, and many of them were very, very technical. And I think perhaps, unlike Mr. Blanchett, I would really feel that the department has done exactly what we wanted them to do, because it is for them to respond to some of the issues that were raised, some of the questions raised by different people who were doing submissions. I think they have done that quite adequately. And I perhaps, you know, some of the issues I was looking at, the issue that was raised quite a few times, the issue of town planners and environmental management consultants, out of their response, I can see now that once this thing is in place, those are going to be. And I know Mr. Blanchett himself raised something, some other part, you know, that he also said is not covered, you know. I just hope that once these boards are in place, are going to, be inclusive in terms of all these other professions actually will be covered. Chair, I agree with Mr. Blanchett, you know, the cost. We have to cost this. I mean, that one is very important. But again, I know that last week we also had, in the presence of EXA, how difficult it is even just to get how much they get their salaries. And I think then, I mean, if any costing has to take place, I would assume that the department must take into consideration what is happening financially now in different professions, and based on that and put it together. And I think I fully agree with Mr. Blanchett. And for them to get that information, I assume that they would actually have to get that information for us. Because based on, yes, this is a very good structure. It must be costed. And it must be costed based on something. Therefore, they must get deep into getting all the details of actually, you know, the present status quo in terms of how these councils, you know, what is the expenditure on everything, not just on certain aspects. But perhaps, Chair, the other area, if you look at number 4, maybe I missed that. It says the function of the council. I see here blank space. I don't know whether the response was given. Maybe I did not actually listen properly. The first presentation. Yes, I think it's clause 4. It talks about the clause 4.1. It talks about the function of the council, and perhaps, you know, I'm sure it was something raised there by whoever, and then perhaps if perhaps the department for my own sake perhaps redo that, because it was something that was raised as well. I'm also very happy, Chair, that the issue of maintaining international standards, that we are actually saying that we are going to be maintaining those standards. And it is very clear that some of the issues raised by our people who are doing submissions are issues perhaps not for to be legislated, but are issues of transition, perhaps that are quite important. And again, I would like to them to the issue of the volume, what do you call this, I'm a volunteer, you know, that are they then saying that those ones would be used perhaps on when the need arises or during transition or when the regulations are being done? We want to get clarity on that, because I think as the committee we were very clear that we want people who are going to be accountable, not people who are going to do, you know, work as they wish, and perhaps, you know, we kept the impression that they're not getting anything, while we know that, they do not do anything for nothing. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. There's something, I'm reminded by Honourable Ramtama here. When coming to the issue of the groups, I don't want to come back later. The issue of the voluntary association, the issue which came sharply last time is the issue of the access to the professions themselves, because and the work done by the voluntary associations, because you can see that they were gatekeepers there. So I don't know what the department and the drafters will do, whether it will come through with this bill or at a regulation level. The issue of the people who must be registered as the engineers. Because really, if you could look at the picture which was there, it was almost all white, and then these people are going to come again to compete for the resources. Have you considered the issue like the health profession, where the registration is done by the registrar, whereby it is so objective? No, although the health practitioner will be evaluated by a peer, but it is under a regulated environment, not a voluntary type of the association. Because we even suggested that if we can expand the registrar, so that there must be secretariat to ensure that everything is done in order, so that there can be objective standards, not depending upon the whims of an individual. Thank you.
Over to you.
Thank you, Chair. I agree with the honourable members about the cost of this whole bill. At this point in time, we are collecting information from the councils as well as CBE. We don't have detailed information. The information that we used previously was the information that was, you know, audited in 2006, 2007. So obviously we need real information in aspect the numbers and the details of the staff and the assets and the liabilities. So we are collecting that. We are hoping soon we will be coming back to the honourable members with that information. The issue of the production of assets of the state. We are dealing with that as well. We have our legal advisors looking at what we can do almost immediately to make sure that there is at least some level of protection. But obviously, the people that are running this council, including the CPE, they have to comply with the PFNA. They know that, but there is obviously a step that as a department we need to protect even before that commitment is. So we are looking at that. We have discussed this with the minister, and she has given us a go-ahead to advise the department on how we should move forward. Do you want to ask me?
Thank you, Honourable Chair. As I said, we had some technological challenges in developing this document. The gap you have there under function of council, under 4, I gave the response verbally earlier on and said, in fact, if you look at the functions of council in clause 4 and you look at the functions of the professional board in clause 60, you will see that the council has strategic decisions it takes, plays the overarching role, and brings the professions together on a number of levels. In terms, whether be it education and training, streamlining registration processes, and so forth and so forth. And the professional board deal with all matters which typically require peer review, you know, like your actual assessments in relation to registration, ends of the document. Clause 16 and Clause 4 set out those roles. Now, Clause 16 study has been built in specifically for two purposes. The one is, you will see A states whether professional board has a power. It doesn't need counsel to ratify any decision it takes. B deals with the situation where there's a dispute between board and counsel. Is it my power? Is it your power? And that has been built in to make sure that there's a dispute resolution mechanism, and the council is then the body which has the final say on whose power is it to exercise. If there's a toss between itself and the professional court. So we'll certainly insert that text into it and make sure you get that on the page. And on the voluntary association issue, you will see that the bill specifically provides for voluntary associations to play a specific role. So they are to be consulted by the minister on the issues set out in clause 5. They are to be consulted most importantly on issues relating to the scope, definition of the scope of the profession, because they're the knowledgeable body of persons who would say this discipline, sub-discipline X, ought to do Y and not do X. But insofar as the access to the profession issues concerned and the issue of the registration process, the bill itself speaks in broad terms to the minister prescribing that process, the register fulfilling administrative function once the peer review process is done. But you are right when you say it is part of the regulations, and the thinking is that the process has to be elevated from a subjective level to an objective level. It's the first objective of those regulations. The second one is that the criteria that would be set out, besides that there isn't a debate between an aspirant person to be registered and the peers that are reviewing about what is he being assessed on, you know, what competencies must he demonstrate. And lastly, the procedure would also be set out in the regulation. So you wouldn't be thrown from pillar to post by, like, the one person I think mentioned, a phone, an admin assistant, is one of speak to that one says, and the processes would be set out in the regulations. And there would be a generic process, and then there would be, obviously, each of the professions may have its own unique requirements, which would be built into the regulation. And then that process is really not a voluntary association process. So you will see that the legislation and this is voluntary association is fulfilling a different role. And I think, lastly, I need to point out this, because it is very important. Statutory bodies are there to regulate. Voluntary associations are there to look after members' interests. And there's invariably a conflict between the two because own interests may not be aligned with the public interest in the legislation. So the own interest issue should be driven at voluntary association level, which is like more like a trade union function, and a regulatory function by the statutory board. And then that's what the bill seeks to do, to separate those two, which is currently being a problem.
Mr. Blanchard is saying the portfolio committee has been sidelined.
Okay. I think what you put in the initial of the presentation, it says proposed operational structure. It was just to put forward some sort of indication what the structure would look like. I said it wasn't cast in stone. We were not putting forward an indication of what that's going to be. Like. So it's certainly not fatal. Completely. I think there's no intention to sideline the portfolio committee in any way, but rather just to assist the structure. In terms of the costing, I think we've covered it lastly, but just to add that we requested initially about some 5 weeks ago, 5 or so weeks ago, the data from councils themselves indicating, well, we requested the cost of the HR by post and total cost of costing. That information has not come through. We requested it again on Friday, and we still haven't received it. But we're hoping to receive it soon, and then we'll be able to cost the company structure.
Madam Chair, I'm disturbed with what I'm hearing again. It's actually confirming what the public hearings have got last week. That the secrecy surrounding the remuneration of these people who are in charge there. And then I don't think that we can allow this thing to go on. I think this is necessary. These people must be subpoenaed to bring it. If they cannot bring it voluntarily, they must be subpoenaed to do that. Why? We know the minister's salary, the Anna. We know the director general's salary. They know our salary. So why? What is the secret about their salary? No, I think that this minister must be subpoenaed. Thank you.
And it's strange that this council complies with the KFA, but they act like they are.
Okay. Actually, that was part of it. I said that was it.
Any further?
Madam Chair, we have not, as a committee, yet dealt with this vote clause by clause.
Yeah.
We've had submission here this morning. One of my colleagues was asleep while the submission was going on. And therefore, I would like to know what are we going to do now, because we need to know all these things before we start passing this vote. We're going to finalize the vote, put all the clauses in the way it should be read. Then that means we are accepting it without the cost. And we need to have that cost. The other question is, last week I questioned whether the Department of Labor has had some input to this board. Because just last week we saw some accidents where people died with blocks of concrete falling on them. There was a question from one of the presenters on why are the lift inspectors not included in this? So there's a lot of difficulties with them. And if we then go to this vote and we just ban all these organizations, we're only looking at the built environment. The built environment is not the only one employing electrical engineers. They're also employed by the South African Railways, they're employed by airlines, they're employed by ship liners. So there's a lot of things that they were in charge of in order to organize their profession. Now changing that totally around without saying what's going to happen, because if we go to this, we should have all that information too, and that's why these people came here and wanted to know what is going to happen to our institutions. Are you just now, as a government, taking over and start running our institutions? Yesterday's newspapers carried an enormous article about South African airline technicians. The state of technical services at South African Airlines is so bad that we are now sending our Boeings to China to have them maintained. And therefore, I need to know all these things before I get. First of all, why was the Department of Labor not involved in this?
Thank you, Mr. Blanchard. Actually, I was under the impression that the department respond to all the submissions and thereafter, as the portfolio committee needs to close by now, when we want to make any amendment, after the department has responded to. Actually, some of these submissions were too technical for us. They needed the department. But if they've got any further, can respond.
Except to say that we've consulted all the departments. I can't remember now exactly what were the responses from the Department of Labor, but certainly they were part of the departments that we consulted and they responded. I don't know if any of my colleagues got a specific response. Because what we do in the case of consultation, it does not mean when we receive the submission we are going to say the bill one way or the other. We respond in a particular way depending on what is presented. So we did contact all the relevant departments.
If you permit me, Madam Chair, the other point to make is this, that, and I think it also came out of the public hearing, which my memory serves me well, there are bodies which exercise concurrent jurisdiction over professionals, because those professionals operate within that sphere which is regulated. Take, for instance, aviation is a classic example. There are certain rules and regulations which prevail in that particular industry. And if you are an engineer and you want to function in that particular industry, you are required by that particular regulatory framework to comply with that framework's requirements. The fact of your being regulated generally as a professional doesn't take away your responsibilities in the other profession. And this bill doesn't seek to establish authority over that which the Civil Aviation Authority does, or that which the Department of Labor does by way of certification of engineers. So that, I think that is something that's very important to bear in mind. And it's the current dispensation. ECSA isn't regulating each and every single aspect of an engineer's performance of duties. There are seven of those duties which are regulated by other departments and other bodies. Thank you.
My understanding as well is that we can't regulate things that are outside of our scope. We can only deal with built environment, and we understand clearly that in the other fields there are regulations that are there, exist there. You know, I think what has been more important to us is that all these sectors deal with something called education. That is why education, all of us have to be central to this thing, because it starts with education. None of these, be it aviation or built environment or whatever, deals with that before education. Therefore, education becomes central. But all other areas, you know, even nursing profession for that matter, it deals with education, you know, but it is actually regulated somewhere. So I think ours here is actually public work deals, it's actually dealing with that. Chair, I think this has actually given us information to go back and actually look at our notes and see whether all the queries and all the questions that we had have actually been dealt with. And then perhaps then we come back and do clause by clause and deal with that. But perhaps it would be important for after tomorrow, then we will be able, if we include or delete anything, that in the process of redoing this deal, that is highlighted so that we can actually see that what changes or maybe have been included or excluded in the thing.
Thank you, Honourable Member. I think what
I'm
saying. Thank you. Can I just ask that we do not meet in this chamber again?
Yeah.
I don't think this chamber lends itself to a function of this nature.
For you to give me a copy of the electronic copy of the presentation. Can you copy it onto this?
Yes, sir.